Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at theopenhouse.net.au blog site and fm1032.com.au.
Well, there is probably no greater pain for a parent than to have a wayward son or daughter, a child who has gone off the rails, as we might say, who has rejected the family's values, maybe even wandered away from the faith. They could be called prodigals, just like that famous biblical story of the son who squanders his inheritance on wild living and then returns to his father's open arms. Rob and Diane Parsons have been travelling the country preparing parents to, quote, bring the prodigals home. And Rob Parsons joins us now. Welcome to Open House.
Oh, thanks. Lovely to be here.
Welcome to Australia.
Yes, we're having a fantastic time here.
Yeah? What's been the best bit so far?
Oh, do you know, we've been all over the country, of course, you know, from coast to coast. And I think it's just the sheer variety, not just of the landscape, but frankly, the population.
Yeah,
just different kinds of people. And just, we've had a fantastic time.
Yeah, well, to date, you've been to almost all the cities apart from Adelaide and Brisbane now.
That's right.
Which you're going to be speaking in this coming week.
Yes.
So you would have seen a fair variety. Yeah, we're an interesting
really
mob.
And I've not been in Australia for 20 years. I came a couple of times, yes, about 20 years ago. So it's lovely to be back.
Where did the first idea come to write a book about prodigals?
I was asked to speak at a very large event in England, about 4,000 people, and people gathered together to pray for their prodigals. I had this burning sensation that so many people carry a tremendous weight of guilt for their prodigals. Somebody once said, there's no pain like parental pain. Mm-hmm. And you know, Sheridan, as I speak to parents all over the world, many come up to me and say, you know, I've got two kids and one's doing just fine and this other one is breaking our heart. How did that happen? We did exactly the same with this one as with her, but she's gone off the rails. I've sat with parents who've spent a lot of time in police cells or sat by hospital beds with kids who are into drugs and excessive alcohol. And so often those parents blame themselves. Where did we go wrong? Mm. And one of the things I wanted to talk about in the event and have been talking about is to release parents from this crushing guilt that it's all their fault.
I can feel it's all their fault. Were we too strict? Were we too lenient? Did we push church too much? Did we not push it enough, et cetera, et cetera? What are the other feelings that the parents often carry?
I mean, those you've mentioned are very strong. I have parents saying to me, if only. If only we made them study hard. If only we hadn't pushed them so hard at school. All those if onlys. Mm. And I think certainly mums, sometimes we run parenting seminars, I'll have 1,000 mums there, and I'll say, what word sums up how you most feel about your motherhood? And honestly, 9 out of 10 mums will say guilt. Why do you feel guilty? Oh, I don't know. I feel guilty because I work outside the home. I feel guilty because I stay at home all day. I just feel guilty. One mum said, I feel guilty about what they eat, what they don't eat, what they might eat. I feel guilty when I drop them off and when I pick them up. And you know, so many parents feel that. And you know, it's not surprising, Sheridan, because since they were very small, they were babies, we have nurtured them, we've taught them to cross the road. We honestly believed when they were small we could protect them forever, but you can't. Mm. It's impossible. And sometimes when we see that happening, we feel, well, perhaps I could have done more. Perhaps I should be doing more.
Yeah.
But it's hard.
What do the fathers feel, given this is Father's Day? What are fathers often feeling when it comes to their kids, maybe their prodigals?
You know, it's really interesting. I would say that emotionally, very often, at least outwardly, in my experience, the mums tend to bear outwardly so much of the pain. But they will talk about it more. And they will shed the tears and they'll cry. Shortly after I wrote the book, Bringing Home the Prodigals, a woman wrote to me and she said, my daughter left when she was 18 years old, just walked out of our home. She said, we didn't know whether she was alive or dead for 6 years. And as we put the lights out at night, I'd say to my husband, darling, don't leave the house dark. Leave the porch light on. We always left the porch light on. And she said, at Christmas, I would put a little Christmas tree outside our front door with lights on it, as we used to when she was a child. I couldn't bear not to. And she said, when my daughter came back to us, and she came back to their home, and also to a faith in God she turned her back on that the parents had, she was 24 years old then. She said, Mum, I was too ashamed to come home. But some nights in the early hours of the morning, 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning, I would drive into our street, and I'd sit in our street in my car in the darkness. And every house was dark apart from our house. You left the light on. And I knew the light was for me. Mm-hmm. And some years at Christmas, again in the early hours of the morning, I'd sit in the street and I'd look at the little Christmas tree. And I knew you'd put it there for me. And that's one of the things we say is always leave that light on. And in my experience, mums tend to bear that open emotion. Leave the light on. Oh, you wonder, when are they coming back? And dads so often bear it silently. And the grief is there, but it's different.
Right.
But just as real.
Okay. The next question I'm going to ask you almost sounds insensitive in light of what you've just said, but is there any responsibility to be taken by parents when it does come to a child going off the rails? When it comes to getting ready to receive the prodigal back home, is there any preparation to be done on the parent's side?
You know, if I didn't think we could do something about that, I don't think I'd be on the road in Australia at the moment. So it's strange, Sheridan, you're right. Answering questions like this is a difficult one. Because on the one hand, you release people from guilt and say, come on, guys, you know, lay the guilt down. But on the other, you have to say, are there things we have done which may have made it easier for our kids to leave? For example, I have two kids. Katie was our first. She was totally compliant. Katie loved to tidy her bedroom. She saved her pocket money for study guides. She complained that church services weren't long enough. So for a while, we think we're fantastic parents. And then Lloyd comes along. And Lloyd comes into the world 4 years later smoking a cigar. Every day of his young life, that boy prays the same prayer. Dear God, help me drive my mother crazy today. And every day, God answered his prayer. So they're two kids. And for a long time, I tried to make Lloyd like Katie. Who wouldn't? So much so that when he was 14, he said to me, Dad, I know it's not true now, but, you know, sometimes when I was little, I used to sometimes think you love Katie more than me. I said, son, I understand that. I'm glad somebody woke me up to that, because, you know, for a while, I tried to make that boy be somebody he just couldn't be. And when you do that, you miss the person that's there. All those incredible gifts. So I'd want to say that to mums and dads. So, yes, we have made mistakes, but you know what? We've all made mistakes. That's the thing. Even God has trouble with his children. Some of your listeners read the Bible. That's the story of a father, the perfect father, because it's Father's Day, that has trouble with his kids. So even if we've screwed up, that's not news. What we must do now is move on. Never too late.
We're talking to Rob Parsons. He's talking about bringing the prodigals home, those kids that have kind of wandered away from the family, maybe the faith as well. So, how do we do it? When it comes to bringing the prodigals home, how can we, so to speak, leave the light on the porch so that they are welcome?
Well, you know, there are a couple of things. I think the first thing is to realize that some of our kids have never left at all. What I mean by that is this. We might, as parents or churches or communities, have kind of tick lists, you know? We wanted them to get A's at school. We wanted them to have a tidy bedroom. We wanted them to dress like this. We wanted them to attend church every Sunday. We had a whole tick list. And these kids walked away, but they never stopped loving us. We think they've walked away from God just because they saw coming to church, but many of them, and I believe in church, I'm there every Sunday, but actually these kids had a love for God, and sometimes we need to look at it in a different way and see perhaps these kids haven't quite walked away in the way we think they have. That's the first thing. And the second thing is to lay down the guilt, and then to realize that sometimes we have to catch our prodigals doing something right. You know, sometimes with our testing kids, we're so on their back. You know, why aren't you like, look at the color of your hair. Look at this. Look at that. Look at you, all that Iron Man grit in your face. When are you going to stop smoking? They only ever hear criticism from us. I was having lunch some time ago with a businessman, and I said, tell me about your family. He said, oh, I got three kids. My daughter's 26. She's doing a PhD. My other daughter's 23. She's doing an MA. And then he picked up his knife and fork and started eating again. So I said, tell me about your third child. He said, oh, he's 19, he's dyslexic. His bedroom's a mess. He doesn't do his college work. He gets car parking fines and forgets to pay them. I tell him he better sharpen up. It's a tough world out there. And I said, well, excuse me, sir, but can you remember ever praising that boy for anything? And he said, no, I really can't. I said, when you go home tonight, find something he's done remotely well and praise him for it. It will revolutionize your relationship with him. And there's somebody listening, a mum and a dad, and their daughter has broken their heart. And they might want to ring her up tonight and say, you know, darling, I know that you've turned your back on most of the things that we held dear, but I'm ringing you tonight to let you know that we love you. This home is always open to you. Forgive us if we've ever given the impression it was otherwise. And you know, darling, we are proud of you. Proud of the way you work in this area. Proud of what you do with kids. Proud of your spirit. And we've realized over the years we've been so busy trying to get you to jump through hoops, sometimes religious hoops. We've missed that. But you know, the truth of it is, the last point might be the greatest. And not all your listeners perhaps will agree with this, but for me, it's central. I pray. You know, nothing will drive you to prayer like having children, because you realize you don't have control. Mm-hmm. And I have two kids, and I've cried for them, and I'm sure they've cried for me. And I thank God for where they are in their lives now. But there's been plenty of pain, lots of tears, and plenty of prayer.
Mm. In fact, at some of the conferences that you've run, you actually invite parents to come with the name of their prodigal on a piece of paper and actually to bring it to a foot of a cross erected on the stage.
It's amazing. And sometimes we'll have a couple of thousand people in an auditorium, and it's not at all embarrassing. And of course, Sheridan, their prodigals are not just kids. Some people come forward and they'll write the name Peter on a little card, and it will be a husband, or a brother or sister or friend. And sometimes in a strange reversal of the parable, a mother or father. It's just an incredible sight to see thousands of people come in, lay the name of their prodigal little basket at the foot of the cross, and then move back to their seat. And you know what we do at the end? We take those names, and as people leave, if they want to, they can put their hand in and take somebody else's card. Mm-hmm. And because we do this all over the world, that card may have come from Uganda in Africa. Some parent has put that card in, and we've promised them that perhaps a parent in Australia will occasionally say a prayer for their prodigal.
Well, Rob, leave us with one story of a prodigal that you'll never forget, a prodigal returning home.
Oh, I think it's a lovely story. A friend of mine has a church. He said it was a little happy family church, and one day a prodigal came to church. He was 26 years of age, I think, perhaps a little older, a Hell's Angel. Long, greasy hair, and on the knuckles of his left hand, he had the initials F-U-C-K tattooed, and on the other hand, Y-O-U. That was his statement of the world. And somebody dared him to come to church, and he walked right down the aisle, and he sat in the front as an affront to the preacher. And fortunately for him, he sat in Marge Staples' area. Marge Staples is one of the welcomers, and she's almost 90 years old, and like most of us as we get old, Sheridan, Marge's mind is getting wider, not narrower. Marge doesn't care about, you know, a little smoke on their breath or even a little alcohol occasionally, you know, or ironmongery or funny colour hair. No, Marge just wants to love people as her saviour did. And she hugs him tight. She says, "Come here, young man. It's lovely to see you in church today. I want to hug you." He didn't stop crying till the preacher finished. He came to Christ that day. Hmm. 6 weeks later, a consultant plastic surgeon removed the letters from his hand because it was the kind of church where they raised their hands in worship and he was offending people, as you can imagine. When they baptized him, the wounds hadn't quite healed and he had plastic bags with rubber bands over his hands as he went under the water. This dear old woman, near to the end of her life, exhibited not the spirit of the elder brother with all the criticism and why haven't you put it right and why are you dressed like this and why that? No, the spirit of the Father. It's an incredible story. The boy comes to himself and he thinks, "I want to go home." And he makes up a little speech. "I'm not worthy to be called your son." I mean, today's Father's Day, and he makes up that speech. "Father, I'm no more worthy to be called your son." And he practices the speech as he walks home. Sheridan, what he doesn't know is every day since he left, the old boy climbed onto the flat roof of the house. He looked down the road and suddenly sees his boy coming and he runs. And the boy starts his speech, "Father, I'm sorry, I've sinned against heaven, against you," but he never finishes his speech. The old man says, "Put a robe on his back and a ring on his finger and shoes on his feet. My boy's home." It's an incredible story.
Mm. Well, let's keep the light on the porch on. Rob Parsons, thanks for your time on Open House tonight.
Lovely to talk to you. Thank you.
Sure, there's been a lot of parents that have been touched by that. If you want to catch Rob while he's still in the country, he's basically covered all the other capital cities, but he's going to be in Brisbane on Tuesday and Adelaide on Friday. And if you'd like to know where, the details are at families.org.au. Families.org.au.
We hope you enjoy this Open House podcast. To hear more from Open House, visit theopenhouse.net.au.